Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to American Allegiance. My name is James Bostic. I am guest hosting tonight for the otherwise would be here, Mr. Kevin White. Kevin is attending to some pretty high profile publishing activities right now. And rather than postpone his show or deprive his listeners of content, here we are, and we are not going to disappoint this evening. By the way, before we get into this, I want to talk a little bit about Browning Fox Publishing, which, of course, is our host's that's his baby, man. That's what that is. Where have I got it here? I had it pulled up. Yeah, right here it is. Browning Fox Publishing Company, our friend, Mr. Kevin White, has a book coming out, a new book that they're publishing there. And it's called Henry and the Hiccups. It's a children's book, but there are books here on politics and religion. And, you know, he's building a stable of authors here that are going to be, just like he says, your new favorite book, Henry and the Hiccups. You want to check that out? Our pal Kevin White, Browning Fox Publishing. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. As you're probably wondering who I am, my name is Bostic, James Bostic. I'm the host of A Conservative's Perspective here on Blog Talk Radio. And when I'm not doing that, which is a lot of the time, I have a show on Tuesday, ordinarily from 7 to 9, then one on Thursday, 7 to 8. That's called A Conservative's Perspective as well. We have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 5.0 radio network, mojo50.com. If you're not listening, you should be, because it is some of the very best of libertarian and conservative talk radio out there, mojo50.com. So when I'm not doing those things, I am the producer. I am the very proud producer of this program right here, American Allegiance. Kevin is a terrific host, and his program is growing, and I'm really happy to be a part of helping him do that. Also, our good friend Gary Binford with United Patriots Uprising here every other Monday, 7 p.m. He was off this Monday, so he'll be there. I produce that show as well. He'll be here. And then, of course, the handsome one, Mark Hoffman, El Guapo, on Thursday nights with Patriot Nation Radio Live, back-to-back with the original ACP. Mark and I have been doing this 6 years, maybe closing in on 7 years now, either Thursdays or Fridays, back-to-back. Gary Binford, some of you guys may not know who that is. He is a superstar. A-listers that won't go on A-list programs because they're too A-listy, they'll talk to Gary. They line up to talk to this guy. That's another one that I'm really proud of. And all those programs here within the spectrum of Patriot Nation Radio. Having said that, let me say this. We have a guest tonight that I am very, very proud to bring on to American Allegiance. His name is Michael Cutler, and he is a very good friend of my program, A Conservative's Perspective. He is very kind to give us his time. Plus, I'm very proud to say he is an awfully good friend of mine. He's going to be with us tonight. Michael is a 30-year veteran federal agent with the Immigration and Naturalization Service. His expertise includes issues concerning drug enforcement, counterintelligence, and organized crime as they would pertain to immigration issues. Outstanding radio tonight. Also, an outstanding radio man in his own right with the Michael Cutler Hour. My friend, and I'm very proud to have him here with us on the program tonight, Mr. Michael Cutler. Welcome. It's great to have you here, Mike.
Thank you, James. Thank you for that great introduction. And indeed, we are good friends, and we're fellow Americans. And, you know, I have to tell you, with all the divisiveness that we're listening to this, I call it manufactured divisiveness, all Americans ought to be united around the fact that we are Americans. And, you know, I'm from New York City, the biggest city in the United States. I happen to be Jewish. You happen to be a Christian from a small town. Many of my friends around the country come from small towns. All of these different factors don't divide us. They just give us an opportunity to enjoy different perspectives, different cultures. And that's what America was supposed to be. The idea of this, if you want to call it the melting pot, the tossed salad. Living in New York has given me an opportunity to experience so many other things, whether it's food, whether it's music, whether it's culture, whether it's art, whatever it is, enriching to be in a community where you could share other people's backgrounds, cultures, music, whatever. And suddenly, the enemies of our country, and I have to see it that way, as the enemies of our country, the enemies of freedom, are trying to divide and conquer America, and we as Americans need to stand up against that dastardly effort. What do you think of that perspective, James?
If there has never been a more polarizing, and I'm using my air fingers quotes, us versus them time, I don't know when it is other than now.
And it's so disturbing because this country, with all of its flaws, let me tell you something. With all of America's flaws, I will put up America against any other country in the history of our species, flaws and all. And, you know, the founding fathers talked about the effort to make this a more perfect union. They recognized our shortcomings, and everybody has shortcomings. And I'm going to tell you, I don't care who you are, where you live, how old you are, think about this and be honest with yourself. No one's going to take attendance and ask you to sign your name to it. But I want to know if there's anybody out there listening to this program who did not on one or more occasions do things or not do things. And to this day, if you could go back in time and change how that day went, you'd be happy to do it. Because we all make mistakes. My parents taught me that the reason there are erasers on the back end of a pencil is because everybody makes mistakes. That includes America. But I don't know of any other country that has made more efforts consistently to right the wrongs and learn from our mistakes than has the United States. And now you have people wanting to cancel our history, cancel our culture. And I'm a very big fan, and you know, of George Orwell, because so much of what he said makes such great sense. If you really and truly want to understand what is happening to America, one of the great books for you to read, quite frankly, is 1984 by George Orwell. Because Orwell really had an interesting perspective on how dictatorships and totalitarian governments operate. And he warned about those people who would destroy the study of the history of a country. He warned about all of these tactics that are playing out. For example, let me just pull this up. Bear me 1 second. My computer is sluggish today.
Talking with our friend Michael Cutler, a 30-year veteran federal agent with Immigration and Naturalization Services, a frequent guest on my program, A Conservative Perspective. And tonight, we're happy to share his vast wealth of knowledge with the folks from American Allegiance.
Well, thank you again. And so here's a couple of quotes that will work. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. This is all about rewriting history. Rewriting history. Think about that. And he also warned that the most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. Tell me, is that not what we're witnessing today, James?
Yeah. And you know what, Michael, a good example of that I can think of right off the bat, bringing up that quote, the 1619 Project.
Yep. Yep.
And now it's crumbling. It's crumbling, and it's lost its credibility, and supporters are moving away from it. However, the damage that was done remains nonetheless.
That's right. Because understand that if you want to build a new building and there's already something built on that piece of property, the first thing you have to do is bring in the wrecking crew to demolish that which stands in that place right now. What stands in the way of the anarchists and the communists and the totalitarians and, yes, the fascists is America. What stands in the way of Chinese domination of the world is America. What stands in the way of the aspirations of the tyrannical regime of Iran is America. For all the people that think America is this terrible country, right? Imagine if America wasn't here and China ran the world or Iran ran the world. You think that America doesn't show enough respect and so forth to people of varying perspectives, sexual orientations, what have you? Try being gay in Iran, see how that works out for you. See how quickly you discover the laws of gravity when you get thrown off the roof of a building. You know, the people that want to tear down America are sawing the branch off of a tree, but they are foolishly sitting on the wrong side of the branch because they themselves would most likely be the first ones to fall. And we've got to stand up to the lunacy. And the way to do it is by talking about the truth and getting past the hypocrisy. Except it's interesting because hypocrisy, according to Orwell, he didn't use the word hypocrisy. He used a better term, and I liked it. And I wrote about this for usinc.org, usincorporated.org. They had been the publisher of The Social Contract, and I contributed almost 24 articles over the years to Social Contract. They have a blog, and I write for that blog now. I contribute a couple of articles a month there. I write for frontpagemag.com, Front Page Magazine. I've been writing for them. Gosh, it's going back to about 2014. So what is that, about 7 or 8 years? The David Horowitz Freedom Center sponsors that. And I just wrote an article, though, for US Inc. about doublethink, because that's what Orwell called it. And he defines doublethink as the power of holding two contradictory beliefs in one's mind simultaneously and accepting both of them. And I have to tell you, just before I called in today to join you on the program, and I'm grateful to you for giving me this opportunity of 2 solid hours, no commercials, no censorship, total freedom of expression, the First Amendment being celebrated vigorously here this evening. How's that for a way of describing what's about to follow, the mayhem that's about to come? But there was a discussion about what's happening in Afghanistan right now. So you have the press secretary for the Pentagon saying, yes, We're concerned and we're worried because Afghanistan may fall and the government of Afghanistan is teetering, you know, within 60 days. And then you've got the press secretary of the President of the United States standing in the White House press room saying, we've given the Afghanis everything they need to be successful. I feel like Ed McMahon on the old Johnny Carson show. Everything they could possibly need, we gave it to them. Well, that's great. But meanwhile, we're getting dire predictions that within 60 days, Afghanistan may well be overrun by the Taliban and their cohorts. And who are their cohorts? Al-Qaeda and ISIS.
And they took another three capital cities today.
Yes. And they're killing and torturing and maiming women and children. Okay. Now, I agree that we've got to stop getting America involved in all these actions around the world and spilling American blood. And of less importance, spending lots of our money. For me, blood is always the first consideration, American blood. But on the other hand, we went into Afghanistan as we now approach the 20th anniversary of the terror attacks of 9/11, and that was the motivation for going in there, to lay waste to ISIS and al-Qaeda so that they couldn't launch additional attacks. And I have to tell you, I've testified before something like 17 congressional hearings in the House and Senate. There were additional hearings where I was invited to provide depositions that became part of the congressional record. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. Because immigration, folks, goes to the heart, goes to the root, goes to the foundation, the basement, if you will, of national security and public safety, but it's never portrayed that way. I'm blessed because I work with the Speaker's Bureau in Washington. And for me, it's a great privilege to go down to D.C. periodically to address a seminar because the seminars are generally held for high-ranking members of the U.S. military and the intelligence services. And it's an incredible thing to stand in a room at the Capitol Hill Club or some other venue, and the audience consists of generals, colonels, senior civilian members, for example, of the U.S. Air Force, other branches of the military, and so forth. And many of these people are fighter jocks. And I can tell you fun stories about having lunch with fighter jocks who remind me of the Mercury astronauts, talk about the right stuff. Just to give you one quick example, because it was kind of fun, and we're dealing with so much doom and gloom, you might enjoy this. I was having lunch, and this is a fantasy for me. My original dream was to be an aerospace engineer. When I was a kid, I wrote letters to Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom, and I got letters back from them, and I wouldn't trade those letters for any sports memorabilia in the world. I've met a bunch of the astronauts. I met Jim Lovell, Dave Scott, Jim McDivitt. Right now, I'm sitting in my office at home looking up at a photograph of me with Gene Kranz, flight director for Projects Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and the Space Shuttle, that he was credited with bringing the Apollo 13 crew home, and I met Jim Lovell, the commander of that mission. And about a year and a half ago, just before COVID, one of the people in my audience is an American astronaut who had just returned from the space station and had done three spacewalks. So we took a photograph together, and I was in hog heaven. I'm in awe of these people. They are unbelievable. And I have to make the point that when I watched that launch of Bezos' rocket, and the Washington Post reporters breathlessly compared him to John Glenn, I was looking for my air sickness bag. And no one mentioned, and they should have, I mean, you know, all the facts need to be on the table. He owns the Washington Post. So these sycophant reporters were really sucking up to their boss. Think about that. And they were comparing him to John Glenn. Well, let's remember, Glenn went up in February 1962. He was the first American to orbit the Earth in a one-man space capsule. He was a test pilot. He was a fighter pilot. He was a Marine Corps officer. So we're going to compare Bezos with John Glenn, who is nothing more than cargo on this rocket of his that didn't even go up just about half as high as Alan Shepard did on his suborbital flight in 1961. And they called the rocket the new Shepard because of Alan Shepard. In fact, he invited two of Alan Shepard's daughters to witness the launch. Okay, that's fine. And he went above the atmosphere. That's fine. But Alan Shepard took control of the Mercury capsule. Alan Shepard was a Navy test pilot. He was a fighter jock who landed fighter planes on the decks of aircraft carriers. Bezos maybe had problems parallel parking his car. but we're going to compare him to Alan Shepard. So I thought there was a more apt analogy, but of course the suck-ups from the Washington Post would never make the comparison. In January 1961, about 5 months before Alan Shepard went up on May 5th, 1961, in the Mercury spacecraft known as Freedom 7, and he went to an altitude of 115 miles, Bezos 60-odd miles, like I say, about half the altitude. But before Shepard went up in January of 1961, a chimpanzee by the name of Ham was launched in a Mercury capsule into a suborbital flight that also went up to about 115 miles. So if we were to compare Bezos to anybody, it would be a chimpanzee, except the chimpanzee actually had to do work in the capsule to prove that he wasn't impaired by the experience of the flight. So he had wires, electrodes attached to his feet to give him mild shocks to get him to pull the appropriate lever and get banana pellets in exchange for the proper action. I wish they had served banana pellets to Mr. Bezos when he did his little hop into the above the atmosphere. Maybe we should send him a bag of banana pellets.
Yeah, huh? Like we were talking today, that Bezos can be Ham and Branson can be Enos.
My goodness gracious. But I mean, when you look at Bezos and he had the chutzpah to thank his customers from Amazon and his employees for providing the money that made it possible, he treats his people like trash. Okay? He treats his people in a way that's reprehensible, and he has more money than some countries, and he took away health care from his part-time employees. But he had the chutzpah to say, thank you to my employees. Thank them by taking care of them. Talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. Maybe they should have attached electrodes to his feet, and so he could have pulled some levers also. I have nothing but disgust for Bezos. He's a despicable individual, and I don't care about his wealth. It's what kind of a moral person he is. And let me tell you, he comes up really, really short. So to compare him to an astronaut, I don't think so. But this is where we are today, because we're living in a country that's become an oligarchy, and in fact, there was an economist at Princeton about a decade ago who had warned that America was going from a republic to an oligarchy where the wealthy get what they want. And the politicians provide to the oligarchs what they want because the mother's milk of politics is money.
Money.
Money talks, BS walks, and that's why I don't want any American showing that level of loyalty to any politician. To any politician. And I thought Donald Trump did a good job as president. He could have been better. He could have done a better job of communicating. And we're going to talk a little bit about immigration. But I have to tell you, when I saw the demonstrators on January 6th saying fight for Trump, I was really upset. Whether you like Trump or not, I'm not fighting for any politician. I will fight to defend the Constitution. I will fight to defend America and our great American neighbors, as Gene Kranz described the American people when I met Gene Kranz. I will fight, of course, to defend my own family, but defend a politician? No. And that leads me to something that I wanted to discuss with you before we move on to the topics. Because I was thinking about this as I was having dinner before I came on today with you. I was helping a group prepare material to convince their members of what we need to do and how we need to do it. And the people said to me, and I'm not going to tell you which group, because when I speak to people, I want to be able to speak freely. And I think it's therefore important to have a level of anonymity. But I can assure you, it's an interesting group. It's well known. And they said, well, we want to get our members' toes, you know, into the water, and then we'll gradually bring them along. And we have to understand that, you know, there are problems in the Republican Party. There are neocons, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, wait a minute, this is really wrong. I said, you want to get their toes into the water? I said, while we're thinking about toes in water, let's think about the Titanic. When the Titanic hit the iceberg, should the captain of the ship got on the PA system and said, ladies and gentlemen, I regret to inform you that dinner is going to be delayed? I don't think so. That's dipping your toes in the water. What the captain needed to say, and I'm going to guess he did, is this boat's going down, and you better head for the life preservers and the lifeboats. And, of course, they didn't have enough lifeboats, because they thought that lifeboats would have scared people off. So for the sake of illusions, they came up short and lots of people died, kind of like where we are today. Immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. I heard that from Sheila Jackson Lee and other members of Congress. And Jackson Lee invited me to testify at a hearing about how two dead terrorists, Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Sheikh, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months to the day after 9/11. I was happy to accept her invitation, which was seconded, which it had to be because she was the minority leader, by the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee at the time, who was James Sensenbrenner, a man for whom I have tremendous respect. So I was delighted to accept the invitation. It was probably one of the highest profile hearings where I ever testified, and you can go to C-SPAN and watch that hearing in its entirety, and I wish you would, because you will see that almost every promise made by the indignant members of Congress about securing the borders, enforcing the laws, that anyone who violates the immigration laws needs to be viewed as a threat, where do those words and where do those promises go? But even then, Sheila Jackson Lee said, we've got to be clear, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. And terrorism has nothing to do with immigration. And I was startled. You know, if there's a terrible crime committed down the block from where you live, and I hope it never happens, but in the middle of the night you hear screams, blood-curdling screams, and you hear gunfire, and the police show up, and they find a massacre in the house. The first question is, did one of the family members do it, or did someone from outside get into the house and commit this terrible crime? And if the crime scene technicians and criminologists and so forth, the detectives, make the determination that, no, this family was killed by people from outside, then the next question that has to be addressed, how did they gain access to the house? Were they sleeping over because they were related or friends? Did someone have a key? Were they invited in on a false pretense? Did they smash the window and enter that way? How did they enter? Because if they couldn't have entered the house, they couldn't have committed the crime. So the first obvious question that has to be asked once you realize that this is a murder that was committed by somebody who is not among the victims, the first question, how did they get in? And guess what? That was how the 9/11 Commission looked at the attacks of 9/11. How did the terrorists who killed so many people enter the United States? Because if they couldn't have entered the United States, they couldn't have attacked us. And that's actually how the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel begins. That it might be obvious to say this, but if they couldn't have entered, they couldn't have killed us, basically. I'm not quoting from it, but that's the first sentence in the preface to that book, which is that report was an official report prepared by the government printing office, and these were the staff members of the 9/11 Commission, not the commission members themselves, but the federal agents and the lawyers working for the government said, we really need to focus on immigration because it's that serious. That's where the vulnerability lies. And in fact, as you read through the 9/11 Commission report and that report on terror travel, you realize that the 9/11 Commission identified 94 terrorists who carried out attacks in the United States up to and including the terror attacks of 9/11, and of the 94, 59, they claim committed immigration or visa fraud. I would argue that they all did because, for the most part, they didn't run borders. They spoke to that inspector at that booth, and they did that job for the first 4 years of my career. So the first thing you ask people coming into the airport, I was at JFK, what's the purpose for your visit? How long do you plan to stay? That's the first. You would keep repeating it ad nauseum. I woke up having nightmares about asking people that question. What's the purpose for your visit? How long do you plan to stay? Do you have an address in the United States? I don't think any one of these pieces of garbage who were coming to America to kill us said to the inspector, oh, yes, I plan to blow up Americans. I plan to take an airliner and turn it into a cruise missile. They all lied. And in fact, the very first topic of a hearing where I did testify before 9/11 was on May 20th, 1997. And the topic of that hearing was visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud because of two terror attacks that were carried out in 1993. In January 93, a Pakistani by the name of Amil Kansi shot up the CIA. He had bought into a courier van delivery service. His van had a sticker that allowed him to park in the CIA parking lot. So that January morning, he had applied for asylum. He pulls into the parking lot at the CIA in Virginia. and he jumps out, not with a package, but with an AK-47, opened fire, killed two CIA officers, wounded three others, and fled. He fled not only from the CIA, but from the United States, because bad guys who attack us have an escape hatch they can leave. They can go back to their home country, and frequently that takes them out of the long reach of the arm of our law. But not in the case of Cansey, given the nature of his crime. Our guys tracked him down, working with Pakistani intelligence. They captured him, brought him back, put him on trial. He was found guilty. He was executed. But it didn't bring back the dead, and it didn't heal the wounds of those he shot. 1 month later, we have the bombing at the Trade Center. The truck that had the bomb was rented by an alien who violated his immigration status. In other words, he was an illegal alien, but he had no problem renting a van. The guy who drove the van was another illegal alien who violated his visa. And all of these individuals were men from the Middle East who, one way or the other, gamed the immigration system. So now in May 1997, there's a hearing about immigration fraud and visa fraud because of those attacks. I was one of the witnesses called. That was my very first hearing. In 1998, Dianne Feinstein, Democrat senator from California on the Judiciary Committee, was part of a hearing on terrorists operating inside the United States. And she came up with three recommendations. They were actually a little bit stiffer than Donald Trump's, but nobody fainted and nobody screamed. And this is 4 years before 9/11. She said, maybe we should end the visa waiver program. We shouldn't be giving perhaps visas to aliens who come from countries that sponsor terrorism. We certainly shouldn't be providing with aliens who come from those countries with training in chemistry, physics, biology, and engineering, because we're teaching our enemies how to kill us by making weapons of mass destruction. Dianne Feinstein. And everyone said, yeah, that sounds reasonable. So where have we gone? New York State, which was hammered the worst on 9/11, now gives driver's licenses to illegal aliens and won't even share the information with DHS unless DHS comes up with a subpoena, which means you may be looking at days, weeks, months, I don't know, after their third coffee break. Of course, that brilliance came about because of the New York State legislators and the soon-to-be ex-government, Mr. Cuomo. Goodness gracious. So explain to me how this makes sense. If you look around the United States today, go to the center of your town and you're going to see barriers that are erected to protect against what? Car bombs and truck bombs. I'm not aware of a single airplane that was used in a terror attack since 9/11 anywhere in the world. There were a couple of attempts that were thwarted, but no successful attack involved an airplane. Almost every attack, however, has involved motor vehicles. We go through hell to get on an airplane, and illegal aliens in places like New York and New Jersey and Illinois and California are getting driver's licenses when they shouldn't be, which gives them a level of credibility, which they shouldn't have. And it also enables them to go to any state in the country, rent a vehicle, and participate in a terror attack. So if you're living in a state where you have rational politicians, don't think you're safe because a terrorist from New York or California or New Jersey or Illinois or some other state could come to your state, walk into a car rental agency, rent a vehicle, and we're off to the races. But understand that both political parties have done this to us. So when I tried to explain all of this to this particular organization, and I said, I don't want you having people dipping their toes in the water. You need to give them a clear message. The Biden administration, what they're doing, violates all of the findings and all of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, and they're endangering every American's life from coast to coast and border to border. I don't want toes dipped in the water. I want everyone thrown into the deep end of the pool, and I want that water to be 3 degrees above absolute freezing. We need to wake up, but understand that it's not just Biden. Both parties have done this to us. It was Ronald Reagan who gave us the amnesty. It was Ronald Reagan who gave us the visa waiver program. It was Ronald Reagan who began the process to give us the visa lottery, the diversity visa, and it was George Herbert Walker Bush who signed that piece of garbage into law. And when I said that to these people, well, Ronald Reagan was misled. I said, I'm not sure, maybe, but what was the placard on the desk in the Oval Office when Harry Truman occupied the Oval Office? Very famous plaque sat right on his desk. Remember,
the
James?
The buck stops here. The buck stops here.
That's right. And so I don't want this love affair with any politician. Everyone's accountable. Everyone's accountable. As an agent, I was accountable. I was accountable if I made an arrest. I was accountable if I didn't make an arrest. Thankfully, I never had to shoot anybody. That was one of the things I said a little prayer every morning when I strapped my gun on. Please, dear Lord, don't let me need to use this damn thing. Because the last thing a normal person wants to do is shoot another person. I love target shooting. But the thought of having to shoot another human being makes my blood run cold. That's the last thing you want to do. But everything I did, I was accountable for. I was involved in a car accident outside my building. But the first thing, and I was waiting at a red light, and somebody banged into me. The first question is, can you justify why you were at that street corner at that moment on that day in that car? Because even if the other driver was speeding with no license and blew a red light and was so drunk that they you know, dissolved the breathalyzer, if you can't justify why you were at that street corner that day, you're in deep trouble because that government car is there for government work, not your work, okay? So it's called accountability. So please, I don't ever again want somebody to explain away the actions of any politician, whether you like them or not. They are accountable. Now, there's another thing that I want to go after today. This term, oh, the neocons, right? The rhinos. They're not really Republicans. They were rhinos, Republican in name. Yes, like Paul Ryan. He was a rhino. Wait a minute. He was a fringe member of the Republican Party when he was Speaker of the House? How about John Boehner, another former speaker of the House? Oh, he was another rhino. Really? No, he was mainstream. So here's the point. To those of you who have never been in the military, I wasn't, but similar practices happened as an agent, but I have many friends in the military. If there's somebody in a platoon who screws up, guess who suffers for that screw up? Every member of the platoon. They don't just say, oh, Private Jones screwed up. No, no, no. You guys screwed up. Why? Because they want peer pressure among the ranks so that if you see one of your fellow soldiers doing something inappropriate, you're going to take that situation into your own hands. Why then aren't we doing the same thing with the Republican Party or the Democrat Party or the Hopping Kangaroo Party? Do not give politicians a way to weasel out of accountability and responsibility. It was the Republican Party that passed the amnesty. It was the Republican Party that gave us the visa waiver program, you see? Because we need to make the Republicans and the Democrats, I don't care what your party affiliation is, truth be known, I'm registered as a Democrat. I haven't voted for a Democrat in ages because they're no longer Democrats in my view. Okay? But this idea that we're going to explain it away, oh, yes, well, Ryan, yeah, not a great guy. Yeah, I didn't like him, but he was a rhino. So what you're doing is giving a pass to the Republican Party. The Republican Party needs to police itself and needs to police its own members. They need to be seen as a party that is supposedly united around core principles. What core principles? Foreign workers need the jobs better than Americans so we can screw Americans out of jobs and wages. Are you okay with that? Any party that can take that position needs to go the way of the dodo bird, but it's not going to happen when the American people excuse away aberrant behavior by members of a political party. Oh, yes, he's a Republican, but in name only. Never mind the party made him the Speaker of the House, third in line to the presidency. I hope you folks understand the point I'm making. James, I hope I'm making sense to you in what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. It's to me, yeah, you're absolutely right in what you're saying with Boehner in particular and with Paul Ryan. And Are they any different than the Democrat counterpart that they would have had at that same period in time? No. But, you know, either one would have done the same thing. Right, exactly.
Why don't we call them Republicans?
There's no difference.
Right. And the damage that's being done is incredible. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer, April 30th, 2009. I watched the hearing on my computer. It was streaming live. I happened to trip over it by accident 15 minutes before it was going to start. It wasn't publicized. They didn't put it up there on TV. And I'm watching it. Greenspan referred to American high-tech workers as the privileged elite. We're talking about middle-class workers, computer programmers, scientists, engineers, technicians, right? Highly skilled. These are people with master's degrees or higher. Highly skilled. They're the privileged elite. And we need to do what Bill Gates wants, open up the quotas so we can bring in lots more people with H-1B visas. And because these foreign workers will expect much less money, once we make these Americans compete with those workers, we can drive down that wage premium that they shouldn't be getting. And this will help with wage inequality, because once we cut their wages, we will greatly reduce inequality in wages between Americans with skills and those with lesser skills. Wow. Took my breath away. And he also said that the undocumented workers only minimally suppress the wages of Americans. But we're talking about minimum wage workers, folks. So when you suppress their wages, we have a new term for them. We call them homeless. And when American high-tech workers lose a job, they get the same title, homeless. Look at all the tent cities and people saying, oh, these are all mentally ill. They aren't all mentally ill. Yes, some of them are. Some of them are drug addicts. And by the way, why are we allowing flows of narcotics into the country we've never seen before? And the drug money, by the way, just so you know, funds terrorism. Hezbollah is operating. Believe it or not, we always think Hezbollah, Middle East. There are tens of thousands of active members of Hezbollah operating in, fill in the blank, Latin America.
Mexico.
They're working in close coordination with human traffickers and drug smugglers. Why? To flood America with drugs to kill our people, and they're being very successful. Okay? And the drug money funds terrorism. The drug money funds the gangs. The drug money enriches the coffers of the cartels. And by the way, they just found an amazing tunnel out of the Border Patrol just did. I just saw the news release with a rail system and everything between the United States and Mexico. Now, I want you to know that that's also a tactic that's used on the borders of Israel. So now ask yourself, could some of the people involved with the tunnel that they just discovered have been from the Middle East? Something for you to think about, but the media is not going to connect that dot, but I will. Okay? So understand, you got Hezbollah moving sleeper agents into the United States. We just had a case, and I've written about this for Front Page Magazine. And what did they say? There was this woman who became a naturalized American who has been very critical of Iran for all of its horrific misconduct, all of its human rights violations and the killings of people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Iran tried to kidnap her and sneak her back to Iran so they could either imprison her or kill her. And there was a woman in California, an Iranian, who was part of this operation. She was the money person. She came up with over $100,000 to pay a private investigator who's also been arrested now. And they had planned to sneak her out of the United States by speedboat. She lives in Brooklyn. And they were going to send it to Venezuela. And Biden, by the way, just took the sanctions off of Venezuela. And we know that Iran has been working hand in glove with Venezuela for well over 10, 15 years. Whose side is Joe Biden and the administration on? I'm still trying to get an answer to that one. Here we have a woman, an American, in America, in Brooklyn, who, if it weren't for the successful outcome of this investigation, might well have been killed by Iranians operating in the United States to take her out. We had a similar case with the Chinese, including a Chinese prosecutor who managed to get a visa to come to the United States. I'd like to know what scrutiny the Biden administration is giving visa applications from China. And what was interesting was five Chinese researchers were being prosecuted for visa fraud. I also wrote about this for Front Page. The Biden administration said, we're not going to prosecute them for visa fraud. And one of the lame excuses, they've been sitting in jail for more than a year, and the penalty for visa fraud is a year in jail, so they've already served a year. Guess what? It's not a year in jail. Visa fraud carries with it a 5-year maximum jail sentence if it's purely visa fraud. If it's visa fraud in conjunction with other crimes, it becomes a 10-year felony. If the crime involves drugs, it becomes a 20-year felony. If the visa fraud involves terrorism, it becomes a 25-year felony. There is no 1-year penalty for visa fraud. 18 U.S.C. Section 1546. Look it up. And they even cited that section of law. Okay, so look it up. Title 18, United States Code, Section 1546, calls for a minimum of a 5-year maximum prison sentence. I know it sounds confusing to say minimum, maximum. In other words, in theory, you could get 5 years, you might get 3 years, you might get 2 years, but the point is it's not a 1-year felony, it's a 5-year felony. So it's lie after lie and operating in a way that undermines efforts to hold China, Iran, and adversarial nations accountable. And so this comes back to doublethink, because what I wrote about in my article about the Biden administration, I did this for Front Page, and doublethink was my article for U.S. Inc. If you remember after 9/11, and I couldn't stand George W. Bush, by the way, you know, he violated the law when he created the Department of Homeland Security. I testified at a couple of hearings about it, by the way. The structure was wrong. I came to call the Department of Homeland Surrender. They had two separate entities, Customs and Border Protection and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, two separate entities, which makes it so unwieldy that it really screwed everything up. As bad as the old INS was, this thing made INS look like a picnic, because what it did was they folded in other agencies and they cut enforcement in half, which is exactly the opposite of what the Homeland Security Act called for. And
now,
John Hostetler,
let me interrupt you for just a minute, Mike, just to make sure everybody understands. It was the Immigration and Naturalization Services that handled all of these issues before they created the Department of Homeland Security, right?
Yes.
It was, I mean, that was the, if you dealt with the border or you dealt with immigration issues, you went through the INS, and then along came the Department of Homeland Security and split it apart.
Yes, and what I had called for, because I was having meetings with members of Congress as a civilian, but they knew my expertise, because in fact, my very first fraud investigation back in 1976, boy, I hate to think of how long ago that was. You wonder where all the gray hair came from. It was an Israeli kid who came in with an altered visa. No big deal. Yeah, Mike, just, you know, see if he'll give you a statement. If he does, he does. If he doesn't, we're sending him home. Nothing to see here. Okay. My very first time to take a deposition by somebody without a senior agent sitting next to me. He was in the jail, didn't have to go out in the street. And I was finishing up my first year of training, and, you know, you have to start to learn how to fly solo. This is just like a little dribble. Right? This is a ground ball. Go pick it up. Well, as I spoke to him, I realized there was a lot more going on. He kept calling Israel Palestine. He was from the West Bank. He was obviously lying. And I brought in a translator because he couldn't understand the question when I asked him, what branch of the Israeli military did you serve in, because they have universal conscription. Couldn't understand the translator either. And that's when I really got upset. And so I called the Israeli consulate, which I wasn't supposed to do. I said, I'm really concerned. They came out reluctantly. And I got into a big argument with them, and my bosses were furious at me. And they eventually come out, and as they're interviewing him in Hebrew, and I'm sitting there with them, these are his own government's officials, so he's entitled to speak to his own government, and I wanted them to, because they wanted to, because now we're concerned about what's going on with this guy. As they're interviewing him, I realized his shirt didn't fit properly. So I told him, take your shirt off. He was in custody, and when you're in custody, you're subject to strip search for security purposes, that there's no weapons that are being concealed. And in those days, they didn't wear the orange jumpsuits. They wore their street clothing. So this guy is wearing a shirt that he brought with him, and the shirt didn't fit right. Picture that, James. And I'm watching this, and I didn't see it previously because I was too busy talking to him. I'm a new agent. You know, you're kind of all thumbs in the beginning. I remember the first time I made an arrest, I felt like I was all thumbs. And after a while, cuffing somebody up, tackling them, whatever you had to do, becomes second nature. It's like, I guess, roping a steer if you're a cowboy, you know? The first time,
right,
lots of luck, but after a while, you get it down to a science. So now I'm stepping back and they're doing the talking and I'm just watching, and suddenly it dawns on me, this guy's shirt's messed up. I said, take your shirt off. He said, I'm not taking it off. I said, well, you have a choice. You'll take it off or I'll take it off you. How are we going to do this? So he reluctantly took off the shirt and he threw it at me. And then I realized why he didn't want to take it off. There was a pocket sewn inside his shirt. And inside the pocket was a piece of paper. And the piece of paper was an ink drawing, a schematic with Arabic writing. Well, I can't read Arabic, but I figured the Israelis ought to be able to. So when I handed it to them, their complexion matched the color of this white piece of paper. It turned out that the schematic was an oil refiner in Israel that was going to be blown up. He was here to get the money to buy the explosives. That was my introduction to the nexus between immigration and terrorism. Now, I started out by talking about speaking before a bunch of generals. What I said to them, and it's funny because very often I get the same response, I never thought of it that way, but you're right. What I said to these generals, I said, you know, your primary mission and that of all of your colleagues and all of the branches of our armed forces, you share a common mission to keep the enemies of America as far from our shores as possible. Is there any disagreement? They all nodded vigorously in agreement. I said, do you realize that up close and in person, that important mission falls to immigration law enforcement? When you watch the old World War II movies, how many times, it's almost cliche, right? These guys, these commandos, right, in their you know, with all their gear and their rifles and the whole bit, the helmets, and they got blackface on, and it's the middle of the night, and there's thunder and lightning, and the airplane is bouncing around, and they're about to parachute behind enemy lines. How many scenes have you seen like that in World War II movies? Right?
Oh, my God.
The
two
commuter
men.
Run,
all
if
of
you
them,
will,
probably.
Behind enemy
yeah.
lines. Right? Guess what? Our enemies are still coming on airplanes, sometimes at night, but they're not parachuting in. They're landing at international airports, and we are admitting them, and then they stroll through the concourse and disappear. That's how the enemies of America are arriving, along with stowing away on ships, along with running the Canadian border, the Mexican border. They're coming by so many means possible that it's unbelievable. You know, Paul Revere said, one if by land, two if by sea. Three lanterns had them covered. If you wanted a lantern for every way that an enemy of America could enter the United States, you'd have to buy more lanterns than they have at the local Home Depots or Lowe's. And if you lit them all, you'd probably set the old North Church on fire. Think about that. I said,
well,
to understand,
you know, Mike, you made a comment just a second ago, and I want to seize on it for a minute. Anytime that we talk about the border, and everybody thinks the same thing when we talk about the border. Well, what border? Well, the Mexican border. We don't even call it the Mexican border. It you know, our discussions about it are so ubiquitous that it doesn't need any other name because we immediately assume we're talking about the southern border. But there are a lot of places probably just as easy for the you know, not for the faint of heart, but for the committed and the determined to cross into the United States from Canada.
Well, Canada, you can actually inadvertently wander across the international border. There's no walls. There's no signs. I've been up there. And you've got stowaways on ship. I just wrote an article for Front Page. I'll tell you, I'm giving everybody a homework assignment. Here's what I want you to do.
Okay.
After the program, don't do it now. After the program, I want everybody to go to Front Page Magazine and check out my articles, and please take the links and send an email to your friends. Put it up on Facebook, however you want to communicate it. I want you to be part of what I call my Bucket Brigade of Truth, okay? Because I just wrote an article for Front Page. The title was Biden's Immigration Policies versus National Security and Public Safety. And the subtitle is Administration Orders Shields Down in the Midst of Numerous Foreign Threats. And I even talked about the Golden Venture. Those of you may not remember it, but 1996, a real beat-up old ship went aground off the Rockaways, which is a borough of New York City, Queens, with about 300 illegal Chinese aliens on board. So there's so many ways of entering the United States. It's not just the Mexican border, which was part of how I had the disagreement with one of the people. She said, oh, I'm from California, and I know all about illegal immigration. I said, you know which state used to be believed to have the greatest number of illegal aliens? And she was stumped. They said, it's New York. And for those of you that are scratching your head and saying, boy, this guy Butler screwed up, let me tell you what. I want you to think back. About a year and a half ago, I believe it was, a gentleman by the name, and I use that term really loosely, El Chapo Guzman was prosecuted for smuggling narcotics into the United States. El Chapo was the most prolific and violent drug smuggler, probably, of any of them coming out of Mexico. And guess where he was prosecuted, boys and girls? In Brooklyn, New York, down the road from Chuck Schumer's house. Why? Because he had turned Roosevelt Avenue in Queens, New York, into the central hub for the entire East Coast drug distribution network that he had created. New York is a sanctuary city. New York State is a sanctuary state. New York has access to the northern border, has access to the coastline, and has international airports. We hit the trifecta. I don't know any better way to make the point. We are a nation of 50 border states. I love to stand in front of an audience and say, how many border states do we have, and can you name them? And you'll always see some guy sitting there looking at his fingers, and he's sitting next to his wife, and he goes, Martha, what's that state next to New Mexico? I can't think of it. What's that state next to New Mexico? Well, you know this guy doesn't get the point. You see, America is a country of 50 border states, and when people run the border, they don't stay there for long. I jokingly say that aliens who run the Mexican border aren't like Neil Armstrong landing on the moon. You know, he grabbed a couple of rocks, planted the flag, and went home. These folks are headed to the rest of the country, and Joe Biden now has the Border Patrol driving them to bus terminals. Transporting illegal aliens is a felony under Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324. Transporting, harboring, shielding, aiding, abetting, inducing, and encouraging. I think I just described the Biden administration, didn't I? Think about that. So they're driving them. And by the way, this is why I use that term double thing, holding two opposite viewpoints. So on the one hand, Biden wants to coerce. Did I say coerce? Persuade. I get these words confused all the time. Wants to coerce Americans into taking the vaccine, wants everyone to wear masks. They're talking about possible lockdowns. We've got to get herd immunity. We must not have people running around the United States who haven't been vaccinated. We must not have people who are sick running around the United States. And then what does he do? Flood America with hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens who haven't been vaccinated and might be carrying the disease. Again, another example of doublethink, just like the business with Afghanistan. We gave them everything they need so they can defend themselves in Afghanistan. And nevertheless, in 60 days, they may overrun the country, or 90 days, whatever the figure. What? I used to give it a different name, and when Schumer would say these ridiculous things, I used to say that he lacked mouth-ear coordination. His own ears didn't hear what was coming out of his own mouth. But as it turns out, George Orwell gave it a different term. He called it double think. Double think. So Joe Biden, who has a problem holding any thought in his mind, apparently has no problem holding two simultaneous thoughts that are contradictory in his mind at the same time. Double think. So we have to protect against COVID, and we're going to do that by flooding America with people who are sick and haven't been vaccinated. And where are the Republicans? You had Lindsey Graham the other day when he asked about whether or not the border was secure, and some yo-yo from the administration said, well, that's a hard question. Well, it's either secure or it isn't. Well, it's not that easy. He said, well, how in the world can we deal with the people who are here now and give them lawful status if you won't control the border? Why was that even part of that hearing? Because Lindsey Graham, a.k.a. Gramness, was one of the eight gangsters, or they call them the Gang of Eight, because both parties are in on it. By the way, it was the Republicans who wanted the open borders long before the Democrats. It was Bernie Sanders in 2006 who stood with the AFL-CIO and issued a statement wherein he said that anybody who hires illegal aliens should be prosecuted because they are costing Americans their jobs and they're destroying middle-class wages, okay? It was the Republicans that said, oh, we don't need immigration enforcement. We need the people to do the work Americans won't do. The only work Americans haven't been able to do is vote these clowns out of office, and that has to start happening post-haste. That's why I'm telling you, folks, the loyalty you may have for individual candidates, you better really know who the candidate is and what they stand for. I remember Ted Cruz and I, well, he wound up pushing me. It almost got very ugly because I said, Senator, you keep saying we got to secure the border, then we got to bring in the world's best and brightest. He said, what's the problem with that? I said, well, where I come from, Brooklyn, we already have a name for the world's best and brightest. We call them Americans. And he lit up like the 4th of July. Because if you know anything about Teddy Cruz, his wife was on the task force over at that wonderful organization known as the Council on Foreign Relations, and the task force was working mightily to take down the borders that separate the United States from Mexico and Canada. So this loyalty to politicians is dangerous and probably antithetical to all those things you'd like to see happen. I think of politicians the way I do magicians. The magician comes out and he has this gorgeous young lady in a little scanty getup, and he says, I'm going to cut her in half. And everybody gasps. Now, they all know that if he really cuts her in half, he's going to go to jail. And when if he ever gets out of jail, no one's ever going to work with him again. So that magician's job is to create a very convincing illusion that he cut this young woman in half without hurting a hair on her head. And, of course, at the end of the act, she jumps up on stage and everybody claps. And everyone's happy, especially that young lady and her parents, because he didn't cut her in half. He wasn't going to. Well, the same thing happens with the politicians. Most Americans want a secure border. We do. And it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican. If you can fog a mirror, you understand that those borders should be secured, right? But they also, the politicians know, if they really secure the border, the bribes, gee whiz, I meant to say campaign contributions. Again, I have a problem with language, you know, it's, I'm working on it, though. I promise you, James. So if they want those bribes, I mean, if they want those campaigns, see, I did it again. Forgive me, folks. I'm just confused. I'm having the Biden moment. So if they want their bribes, let's call it what the hell it is, they know they better not secure the border because the money's going to stop quickly. And without money, you can't successfully run for office. And today, the way you do a political hit on somebody is you cut off their funds. Lou Barletta, the congressman from Pennsylvania, when he was the mayor of Hazleton, I helped him because he was the first mayor to enact ordinances on the city level that made hiring illegal aliens or providing housing to illegal aliens illegal under city ordinance. He got sued, and it went to the Supreme Court. Sadly, they lost the case. The bad guys won. But he went on to become a congressman, and he was going to run for the Senate. But this is Lou Barletta, not a globalist, and the Republican Party defunded his campaign. He did not have enough money to run one single television commercial. Thank you, Republican Party. But don't be shocked, because the Republican Party wouldn't give Donald Trump money to build the wall either. So when people say, oh, neocons, oh, rhinos, no, I call them Republicans, betrayers. And the Democrats are no better, because the goal of the Democrats, and this is where stupid comes in, and there's no cure for stupid. They want to import so many voters, and then they're going to win the election. No, that's not the goal of the Democrats. The Democrats, I am convinced of this, what they want is far more sinister. They, I believe, want to crash the entire U.S. economy. Stop and think about all that they're doing, the deficits they're running up, flooding America with God knows how many people, not being vetted, right? Think about that, especially as we approach the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Now, remember, it was only 19 hijackers on 9/11 who killed more people than we lost to the entire Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor, and the death count from 9/11 is still continuing. 19 terrorists did that. If 1 in 1,000 of the people admitted by Biden are terrorists, we're screwed, because now you've got a sizable population of terrorists inside the United States. And no one's even talking about, to your point, how they're coming in from the Canadian border or how many people are actually getting visas from State Department that shouldn't be getting visas or how many people are being admitted who shouldn't be admitted at the airport. You know, just because you have a visa doesn't mean you're going to be admitted. When Trump said to those people that came from those seven magical countries, we're not going to admit you because we can't screen you, and the rent-a-mob came out screaming, oh, my God, these people had visas. The president acted unconstitutionally. No, he didn't. The Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, tells the story. The government of the United States is to protect the states, is to provide each state or guarantee to each state a Republican form of government and defend each state against invasion and domestic violence. I would argue that millions of people illegally present in our country, is an invasion. But that's me. So understand that in a typical year, tens of thousands, in fact, over 100,000 aliens with visas or trying to enter under the visa waiver program are denied entry by the inspectors at the port of entry. It's not a done deal. A visa does not guarantee entry. Okay? I'd love to know how many people are being denied entry by Joe Biden. I bet you the numbers are much smaller now than even under Obama, because under his administration, his last year, if I have the number correct, it was about 105,000 aliens who had turned around at ports of entry. Trump turned around 200, and these people melted down. Trump needed to go on TV that night and explain the law to the American people. I wish he had. You know, you and I were talking earlier today. Donald Trump reminds me of a doctor who knows how to cure you, but he has terrible bedside manner. That was Donald Trump's big shortfall, his inability to communicate effectively with the American people. So we're being threatened from every direction, whether it's the health issue, whether it's jobs. And what the Democrats are doing is flooding America. And why are they pushing comprehensive immigration reform? And I've talked about this on your program, so this audience needs to know. So I'm going to ask all of you a question. Now, there's a joke that they ask people. They say, oh, this guy's not too smart. What was the color of George Washington's white horse? And everyone snickers, right? Well, obviously, his horse was white. Well, if we were to legalize, and Biden keeps talking about 11 million illegals, Yale University did a study 2 years ago where they said it's probably more than double that, more than 22 million. I think it's probably 30 million, maybe more than that, but we can quibble. But let's say, for argument's sake, just so we have a baseline, that we have 25 million illegal aliens who would participate in a massive Biden amnesty. By the way, something to help keep you awake at night. If I can't sleep at night, I don't want you to sleep at night. That's what I told Chairman Sensenbrenner when I met with him. And he said to me, I said, you know, I'm having a real problem sleeping. And he said to me, are you concerned about national security and wanting to get his attention? Humor is a very effective tool. I said, well, I sure as hell wouldn't be discussing my sex life with you, Mr. Chairman. Of course it's national security, and everybody, including the chairman, laughed like crazy, which got him to pay attention, you see. Humor really works, trust me. But so here's the point. If, let's say, there's 25 million, there's going to be no interviews. There's going to be no field investigations. You won't be able to know if these guys got here 10 days ago or 10 years ago, because they're just going to have to answer questions on a form, and there's no capacity to do any investigations to see if they're lying. Immigration fraud was identified by the 9/11 Commission as the key method of entry and embedding for the terrorists. So 25 million, all lying about their identities, lying about their dates of entry, lying about everything, and no way of refuting what they're saying. And add to that a guy by the name of Alejandro Mayorkas, who runs the Department of Homeland Security, I call the Department of Homeland Surrender, who worked for Barack Obama as the head of Citizenship and Immigration Services. And he ordered his people to get to yes, approve everything. Well, if you're approving everything, guess what happens to your ability to find fraud or your desire to find? It goes away. So this is a threat to national security. But everyone's happy when they say we're going to clear up the backlog. We're going to get rid of the red tape. No, the red tape is that barrier that protects us from people that want to kill us. All right, think about that. So we've got all this going on. So my question is, if we were to legalize 25 million illegal aliens, how many aliens get green cards? Now, I know you're sitting there saying, this guy Cutler's lost his mind. It's obvious. If 25 million aliens get legal status, 25 million aliens get green cards. That's true. But the actual number is much, much, much higher. Just like Ronald Reagan, we were told about 1 million would get green cards from his ill-fated amnesty. We wind up with 3.5 million. But that was a lie also, because the liars in government, both parties, didn't tell you that all these aliens would immediately have an absolute right to bring in all of their minor children and their spouses. So let's say 25 million aliens get green cards, and on average they have 4 children each. Now, we're not even talking about their spouses. What's 4 times 25 million? 100 million.
100 million.
So suddenly, yes. So suddenly, we're looking, and what if they have 5 kids each on average? Or 10 kids each, and they're being paid to pretend that these are their children. We have no idea. I'm being an optimist when I say 25 million and they each have four kids. It could be 30 million and they each have nine kids. What kind of numbers are we looking at? I'll tell you what we're looking at, a catastrophic disaster. And the Democrats keep screaming about the environment. So let's think about this now. Everybody who is inside the United States needs more than a pillow to sleep on, right? They need water. They need food. They need electricity. They need transportation. If they're children, they need education. They need access to hospitals and medical care. They need clothing. They need shelter. What would the pressure be on inflation when suddenly you have how many more mouths to feed? We're talking about adding 50% to America's population if we're lucky. Think about that. What does that do to the environment? I did a little bit of digging. Each person needs something like 82 gallons of water each day for cooking, for drinking, and for sanitary purposes, flushing toilets and taking showers. Think about that.
Well, it's Cloward and Piven strategy.
It is, and no one seems to be getting the point of the exercise. And who was their biggest friend on this issue? Lindsey Graham. And what party is he part of?
He's a Republican.
Bingo. These are Republicrats. And if you remember when the Gang of Eight, the eight gangsters, had their meeting, what was the first thing they did at the meeting? And I laughed when I saw it. They kicked out all their staffers. You know why? Because they didn't want witnesses to the scene of the crime. It was John McCain. It was Lindsey Graham. It was Chuck Schumer. It was, Harry Reid. Harry Reid, by the way, made an impassioned speech from the floor of the Senate as a new senator saying that we ought to stop birthright citizenship. If you're here illegally, we should give you absolutely nothing. I happen to agree with him. So what happened? Well, they got paid off, bought off, blackmailed, extorted. I don't know. Do these people not have children and grandchildren? Do they even understand how bleak a future they would create for their own children by doing what they're doing? Do they care? Maybe not. I'm thinking about writing an article about Nancy and Chuck. And, you know, the Kennedy book was a great book, and I was a big fan of JFK. Again, I didn't think that everything he did was right, and his dalliances certainly left him open to the potential for blackmail and so forth. But I thought he was a great president. You know, he got us, he understood America. He was certainly a patriot, as was Eisenhower. Eisenhower was one of my all-time favorite presidents. And Kennedy, if you know his story, wrote a book called Profiles in Courage. And I really think that Schumer and Nancy should write a similar book, but I call it Profiles in Cowardice. And the reason I say that is because
big book.
They, yeah, well, yes, Profiles in Courage for them would be a zero. Profiles in Cowardice, my God, it would be volumes. But it
War
starts
and peace.
With the fact, yeah, really, truly, but it starts with what? It starts with the squad pushing them around like a bunch of children. Instead of standing up to them and showing some spine and saying, who the hell do you kids think you are? You're young enough to be our grandchildren. You just got to Washington. Sit down and shut up until you learn what this is about. Their reaction is, what do we have to do to satisfy you? We'll do anything you want. We'll go as far to the left. We'll drive the bus into the oncoming traffic. Just please let me stay as Speaker of the House for another 2 years. I mean, this is insanity. You know, there comes a time when you pack it in. There have been some very good television programs where they decided the ratings are still up in the stratosphere, and we're going to end the program so we go out at the top, not at the bottom. We don't want to grovel our way off the stage. I have to tell you, as an agent, it's hard giving up the badge because that badge represents a big part of who you are when you're in law enforcement. Ask anybody who's a police officer or a federal agent. It's more than a job. You know, you're putting your life on the line. But the day does come when that badge goes away. And if you're a normal person, you say, well, in my case, I had a 30-year run. It was a good run. I took a lot of bad people off the street. I hope I saved some lives in the process and prevented people from being harmed and maybe protected our security, helped our allies. I mean, Israel was thrilled that because when we developed that information, they were able to actually grab six would-be co-conspirators about a week before that oil refinery was going to be blown up. And I worked very closely with the Israeli National Police for the balance of my career. So, you know, you look back and you say, gee whiz, we did good. You know, we earned our keep and you know, the country is better for it. And you move on. But Pelosi is so driven by this hunger for power, along with very expensive ice cream, I guess. I don't know. So she's so eager that she'll do anything, not for America, but to America, so she can stay in power another year or two. If this isn't pathological, I don't know what is. See, a real leader would stand up to these nitwits and say, listen, sit down and shut up. This isn't what the Democrat Party is about. Instead, they're groveling and begging and manipulating to placate people who hate this country. That's where we are today. But where, again, are the Republicans? The Republicans are bought and paid for by the Chamber of Commerce. And by the way, I'm going to ask you folks a question. Again, this isn't your usual audience, so I'm probably new to the people that are hearing the program today. And you can go to my own website, by the way, folks. It's Michael Cutler, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. And I love asking this question. I've done this with Air Force generals, and it's always cute to see the reaction. So it's a yes or no question. Yes or no, the immigration system is broken. Now, I know most of you are sitting there saying, what, is he kidding me? Of course it's broken. And I'm about to rattle your tree. The immigration system is not broken. Believe it or not, it has morphed from a system that's designed to protect national security, public safety, public health, and the jobs and wages of Americans into a delivery system. And as a delivery system, it is more efficient than FedEx and UPS combined. Now, what does it deliver, you might be thinking? It delivers, first and foremost, a virtually unlimited supply of cheap labor. And it's not just the illegal aliens that are doing the bottom-rung jobs. It's the high-tech workers. I told you that I had this argument with Bob Goodlatte. I met with Bob Goodlatte because of Alan Greenspan's testimony for Chuck Schumer back in 2009. And I said to him, Mr. Chairman, he was chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, oversees immigration. I testified in front of him. I said, why aren't you going after Alan Greenspan for what he said? Why aren't you going after the Democrats and Chuck Schumer? This was Schumer's hearing. Schumer was the chairman of the subcommittee. Wouldn't answer me. On the third attempt, he finally answered me. And I said, you know, my first wife died tragically of cancer more than three decades ago. She was a brilliant programmer. She was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, had an MBA in computer science. She was a member of the National Math Honor Society. At the young age of 30, she had a team of over 30 programmers working for her, with the exception of one employee. These were all Americans. They all had advanced degrees, and they were all honors graduates. There's no shortage. Why in the world aren't you standing up for those American workers? And this is now Bob Goodlatte, Republican chairman. First, he told me, well, look, I'm an immigration lawyer. Well, if you look him up, you'll find out he made a fortune, because what did he specialize in? I give you one guess, H-1B visas. He had a multi-state practice. But when I talked about my late wife, may she rest in peace, he said, well, you should know about my son. My son knows a lot about computers, and he would love to see thousands and thousands and thousands of brilliant Indian programmers come to America and take those jobs. I said, why would you want to flood America with thousands of Indians when you have Americans who've been doing the jobs for decades and they've been very successful and very experienced? You ought to talk to my son. And I'm thinking, great. So your son has a father who can deliver on his wish list. And I turned to Goodlatte and I said, so tell me, Chairman, what are the Americans to you, chopped liver? I would imagine the chairman of the United States Judiciary Committee in the House of the People, the People's House, would be concerned about the plight of Americans. Guess what? The meeting abruptly ended. So it delivers an unlimited supply of cheap labor on all levels. It also delivers an unlimited supply of foreign tourists. That's why we have the visa waiver program. It also delivers an unlimited supply of foreign students. There's over 8,000 schools authorized to bring in foreign students, half these schools probably don't even exist, but we don't have the resources to investigate the schools. And we're educating America's adversaries. In fact, one of the things that Donald Trump did that was very effective was he had Betsy DeVos, the Secretary for Education, conduct an investigation into the fact that over $8 billion was discovered in having been given to American universities by China, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and other countries that are not really our friends. $8 billion undeclared, and much more money was declared. Why are these countries pumping money into American universities? Do you think they want to make sure our kids are well-educated? Of course not. It's so that they can control the curriculum, and they could control the faculty, and they could get their students to attend our schools so they could have an education equal to our kids so they could beat us in the international marketplace. And you add to that espionage, so when China steals from us, they don't have to pay for the research and development that the companies that they're stealing from had to spend time and money on. Part of the price of any product you buy, I don't care if it's a computer, I don't care if it's a cell phone, I don't care if it's a walking stick, okay? It doesn't matter. Research and development had to go into that. Same thing with medication. Same thing with automobiles. So if you could steal the secrets without having to put time and money into developing the technology, you can make that product for a lot less. And, of course, in China with slave labor, of course they make it for a lot less. So for all the talk about the green perspective, China spews garbage into the atmosphere, and they're going to be allowed to continue doing it for at least another decade, even though we have this emergency and crisis in climate that we should talk about another day, because that's a whole bag of tricks by itself. I was originally a science major. Two of my kids became engineers. I'd lost my parents when I was in college, so my ability to study kind of went out the window. So I went from pre-engineering to communications, arts, and sciences. I call my education a BA in BS, but that's a story for another day. But the point of the matter is that the science doesn't add up. And when people say follow the science, run for your life, because science isn't static. Science is a continuing, ongoing quest for facts and the truth. Albert Einstein got it exactly right when he compared himself to a child playing at water's edge, picking up an occasional shell or pebble at the water's edge while the vast ocean of knowledge lay before him yet undiscovered. That was Albert Einstein, one of the most brilliant human beings to ever walk the planet. And that's why science keeps evolving. We find new questions to ask. And by the way, Voltaire, the French philosopher, said you judge a person's intelligence by the questions they ask. Today you're not allowed to ask questions, because if you ask questions, you're going to make people accountable. And these folks don't want to be accountable. And if you really want to know who the true anti-fascists are, look no further than the armed forces of the United States military and our allies. Think about D-Day. Think about all those battles. Think about all those young men and women who came home in coffins or terribly disfigured, and not only during the Second World War, but in other wars, fighting the fascists and fighting the tyrants. And these clowns run around calling themselves Antifa. We're the anti-fascists. No, they are the fascists. They're the new fascists. But so in any event, the real bottom line to all of this is that you've got a country today being run by politicians who don't care about Americans. They've turned immigration into a delivery system. And we've left out the biggest delivery process of all. And you're going to love it, folks. Because the immigration system delivers an unlimited supply of clients for immigration law firms. Think about that. And so the whole idea to comprehensive immigration reform was not to get the aliens out of the shadows. That's a lie. You hire agents to do that. And you can't control the border at the border, because any alien determined to enter the United States will ultimately succeed, whether it's running the Mexican border, the Canadian border, getting a visa, stowing away on a ship. The issue is interior enforcement. There always has been interior enforcement, and we've never taken it seriously, because ICE agents not only arrest illegal aliens, but they lock up crooked lawyers or crooked employers. I know. I did the job for 26 years. Half my time I spent on the drug task force. I had desks at the FBI, DEA, ATF. I was part of DEA intelligence for 4 years before that. It was an eye-opener. And if you go down Roosevelt Avenue, where El Chapo Guzman ran his operation, there must be 100 money wire services, money remitters. That's the residue from the drug deals, okay? And these places, for the most part, are open 24/7. This is pure economic supply and demand. How many people working in the back of a restaurant do you think are waking up at 2 in the morning and sending money home to their family? Not many. So why are these places so hopping busy at 3 o'clock in the morning? If you drive by, you'll see them there, because they're consummating drug deals. So you have Americans dying because of drugs. You have the drug money flowing out of the United States, China laundering much of the drug money these days, by the way, and providing the precursor chemicals for fentanyl and other dangerous, deadly chemicals, drugs. I don't like the term drug. It sounds like aspirin. These aren't aspirins, I promise you. And when was the last time you saw a good TV commercial the way they did for cigarettes warning about drug use? None. Why? Because if you took drug money out of Wall Street banking and real estate, those operations would go belly up. America is floating on drug money. And our so-called leaders apparently could care less. And by the way, for the record, the border wall is not designed to stop anybody from entering the United States. You probably think, oh, yep, Cutler really lost his mind now. What is he talking about? Well, the border wall, if it was supposed to keep people out of America, would block off ports of entry, but it doesn't. What the border wall does do is secure the spaces between ports of entry, so it funnels all traffic, both human and commerce, through ports of entry so they can be vetted and a record of entry is created. And so we have an orderly system. It's like the velvet rope in the bank that guides customers to the next available teller. By the way, don't they have fences around the baseball parks? Now, they're not trying to keep customers out. If they keep customers out, they're going to go broke. They want people to come and buy a ticket. But they've got these big gates, these big fences around the ball field. Why? They don't want people running onto the field and interfering with the game. And they want to make sure that everybody who enters the ballpark goes through a metal detector these days, because we live in an insane era, and they pay for their seats. It's not anti-ballpark, because there are ways in. Same thing here. For the United States, it's not a gate, but it's a port of entry. So all that the border wall did was to make it harder to enter the United States without inspection. And it's remarkable, because Chuck Schumer, about 6 years ago, proposed a law that would make trespassing on critical infrastructure or landmarks a federal crime with a 5-year felony. He said, when people trespass, it's dangerous, and we need to put people in jail. And he even talked about a 16-year-old kid who climbed the Trade Center that was under construction, the new Freedom Tower. And he said, what that kid did was dangerous. He needs to go to jail. Then they'll learn to stop doing it. So Chuck Schumer is upset about people who trespass, but when people trespass on America, such as illegal aliens, then Schumer wants to give them U.S. citizenship. Just stop and think about the doublethink that we're looking at, the lack of mouth-ear coordination that we're looking at, the hypocrisy that we're looking at. And so if you really want to ramp up interior enforcement, you need agents, but we don't have any. We have 6,000 ICE agents, and most of the work they do has nothing to do with immigration. That's why it's immigration and customs enforcement. And John Hostetler spoke about it bitterly, and he was a Republican chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee. And he laid it out, and he said, look, the attacks didn't happen because of violations of other laws. These attacks were only possible because of multiple failures of the immigration system. And he said the way that the Department of Homeland Security was put together, splitting immigration enforcement in half, gave us immigration incoherence, his words, and made it impossible to secure the borders, made it impossible to enforce the law, and made it impossible to protect Americans. That was a Republican chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee. I testified for John at least 8 times. And what's remarkable was it wasn't long after that that the Republicans defunded his campaign. I wonder why. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there was something else going on. But isn't it remarkable that the Republican chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee, who had the chutzpah, the moral fortitude, the spine to stand up and say, this is what is happening under the Bush administration, suddenly found himself with no campaign funding? Do not have a loyalty to a party. Have loyalty to the Constitution. Have loyalty for each other as Americans. Let's focus on what makes us similar, not different. We don't need critical race theory, folks. We need critical empathy theory. one of my favorite bumper stickers, and there's two of them that I really like. One says, the more people I meet, the more I love my dog, which is true. But the other one says, be kind to the people we meet because you don't know the battles they're fighting. And I don't care if you're black or white, green or purple. Life is a tough proposition. I had prostate cancer 20 years ago, and I remember getting off the scanner. You know, I had to have my body scanned to make sure it hadn't spread because then they wouldn't have done surgery. And I was nervous because I'd lost my first wife and both of my parents to cancer, and I thought, oh, boy, here I am, and I was only in my early 50s. And I was really upset, as you could imagine. And when I got off the machine and had to wait for the results, there was a black gentleman about my age standing there, also in an exam robe. He looked at me. I looked at him. I never got the guy's name that I could recall. But, you know, we hugged each other, and we both had tears in our eyes, and we both wished each other success with our war against cancer. I didn't care if he was purple and had yellow polka dots. He was another human being fighting for his life. I don't think he gave a rat's tail that I wasn't black, but I was white. We're human. That's what the focus needs to be on. Shame on us if we allow these thugs to intimidate Americans into not standing united. Because we should. Because we should. And if you think America is a terrible country, I ask you to tell me what your alternative choice is. Okay, understand what's going on. Understand how immigration is the most critical issue. What the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill was supposed to do was encourage aliens by the millions to head to the waiting rooms of immigration law firms. And you have immigration lawyers on both sides of the aisle. The Democrats today control both houses. Zoe Lofgren is the chairperson of the House Immigration Subcommittee. I've testified in front of Zoe a bunch of times. She's an immigration lawyer. She's a pretty big player in the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and she chairs the Immigration Subcommittee in the House of Representatives. How do you say conflict of interest? Understand what this is about. When you can bring in foreign workers, you're providing cheap labor to those companies and work for immigration lawyers. Why chase ambulances when you could chase coyotes? And you don't even have to chase them. Comprehensive reform will attract them into your waiting room, and Biden just signed off to give money to immigration lawyers. Do you think he's doing it to help the illegal aliens? No, he's not. Hey, people say to me, oh, he's pandering to the illegals. You never pander to the powerless. Do you know why Joe Biden is doing it? Do you know why comprehensive immigration reform called for paying the legal fees for illegal aliens? It's a simple question with a simple answer. Lawyers hate working for free. They were feathering their own nest. And remember how many members of Congress are lawyers and how many of their friends are immigration lawyers, if they aren't. This is a massive screwing of Americans by people that we elected to represent us, and they're not. And they are not. That's the issue here, folks. The issue is that they are taking money because they need to do the bidding for the people that write the checks so they can wage successful campaigns. George Orwell had a really good quote about this. Political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. Think about that. Isn't that what we're really witnessing? Isn't this pure wind? This is a con game. This is a con game of unprecedented proportions. And it started with the misuse of language. It's newspeak. And it started with Jimmy Carter. We can't call these people illegal aliens. Oh, my God, and Biden is at it again. They're undocumented immigrants. Really? You know, the term alien is not an insult. It simply means any person that is citizen or national of the United States. So what's wrong with the word alien? They don't want you to use the word alien because it provides clarity to the conversation. And if you're providing clarity to the conversation, then it's harder to con you. Con artists confound honest conversation by tricky use of language. It's the magician's equivalent of blue smoke and mirrors, you see. This is a con job. So these are all immigrants. And if you dare suggest that we don't let people in, you're anti-immigrants. Meanwhile, the most likely victim of the transnational criminals are who? The members of the ethnic immigrant community, and not just from Latin America. It's not about brown skin. if you want to know what the immigration laws are all about, you can read my articles at Front Page Mag or usinc.org, or I'll give it to you right now. Jot this down. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. That's Title 8. And it lists the categories of aliens who we are supposed to keep out of the United States. And I promise you there's not a single word in those in the list that deals with race, religion, or ethnicity. And in fact, I'm going to tell you something. If our laws made that kind of distinction, I couldn't have enforced those laws for 30 seconds, let alone 30 years. My family was decimated in the Holocaust because my family's Jewish. I'm a Jew. My mother's mother was killed in Poland because of our religion. I was named for her. So understand, this isn't about discriminating. This isn't about race or religion. It begins with aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases. And during COVID, don't you think this is ever more appropriate and of concern? And let's not forget that Ellis Island was a quarantine station. At the time of its completion, it consisted of, I think it was something like 42 hospital buildings, the biggest hospital complex in America. Ellis Island started out as a small island, and as New York built the subways, they were tunneling underground to make the subways. They took all that debris, and they put it on barges, and that's how they built Ellis Island. The idea was you didn't get off Ellis Island unless the Immigration and Public Health Authorities allowed you to, and then they put you on a boat that they ran. So there was no catch and release, you see. You couldn't get to the mainland if they wouldn't allow you to, and families were split up at Ellis Island. If one member of a family had a bad disease, they'd give you a choice. You want to go home with your sick family member, or do you want to say goodbye here, head for America, but your father, your mother, whoever, they're going back to their home country. It was about preventing epidemics and pandemics, and we see now where we still have many of those same problems. We're also supposed to keep out aliens who are severely mentally ill and violent or sex offenders and that sort of thing. Stand it. I wonder if Cuomo would be admitted these days. Sex offender. Well, what do I know? Moving right along, couldn't resist. This is a guy who, through negligence or worse, caused how many people to suffer in the nursing homes?
Remarkable. Oh, at least 16,000 at a minimum.
This is why,
and like
and
you
this
and I
is
were
why
talking
we,
today,
yep.
They gave him an Emmy. He yep. killed 16,000 people, and they gave him an Emmy. He grabbed the wrong
movie. He earned
movie.
It. Wait a minute. No. He earned it. You know what the category was? Yes, you know what the category was?
What?
Acting badly.
Well, he got that. He's definitely a bad actor, and he has been all the way through. But see what, and this is, you mentioned this earlier today when we were talking. The guy is a mass murderer. What that was a crime against humanity. And what does everybody sit up straight and clutch their pearls about? And I'm not marginalizing, and I'm not trying to invalidate sexual assault or that kind of boorish behavior at all. I'm just saying they're still alive. He didn't take their boobies with him. They still got everything. They're a little traumatized, but they're still alive. He killed 16,000 people.
Let's put it this way. If I was doing a prosecution as an agent, certainly I would charge him with it, but you go with the leading charge at the top. And what's the leading charge here to put clarity to this? The death of those people that was apparently, we have to be careful, apparently, allegedly, it shouldn't have happened. Okay? Think about that. So, it was a crime committed? Yes. But why is it that grabs the headlines and the murder or the death of these people kind of slips to the background? We're a country of screwed up values, purist interests, and we can't get our act straight. The biggest threat that he posed to New Yorkers was what happened with the nursing homes and COVID. And now what I want to know, and Americans should demand this, why did the Justice Department under Biden drop its investigation of Cuomo?
Andrew. Yeah.
Why is Andrew Cuomo no longer the subject of a federal investigation because of those actions? We should demand an answer to that question. What do you think of that?
I think that it's a legitimate question, and we need to look just as closely at what happened in Michigan, because Gretchen Whitmer did the same thing. Governor Murphy in New Jersey did the same thing. Mike DeWine.
Murphy said when he was asked about people going to church and synagogue, he said that the First Amendment was above his pay grade. Constitution is above the pay grade of a governor. That should have led to, in my view, an immediate impeachment. What do you think of that?
These guys are killers, Mike. I mean, you know, you've seen the directive that came, you know, and at the top of the page, you've got Governor Cuomo. You've got the director of the New York State Board of Health. You've got some director of nursing also ran that threw in there with this to give it gravitas, telling these people what they had to do in terms of the COVID patients. You know, it was like an execution order.
It was, and I can tell you, in my neighborhood, I borrowed in for several months. We went out very little. Most of what we got was delivered to us. And I went out for a drive one day. I was suffering cabin fever, and I said to my wife, I got to go for a drive before I lose my mind. And I drove by a number of nursing homes not far from my house, and it was the most chilling thing I'd ever seen. Because you know what was parked in front of those nursing homes? Refrigerators.
Probably hearses or ambulances. Yeah.
No, refrigerator trucks. There were dead bodies in those
That many?
Yes.
Good God.
Refrigerator trucks. I was so sick to my stomach, I couldn't continue. I went home. I said, I'm done. I just want to go home. I pulled into the driveway, walked upstairs, and I was done. Refrigerator trucks. Think about that. And they weren't there serving dinner, I promise you. There was only one reason those refrigerator trucks were there. And there was a bunch of them. What in the world are we doing to ourselves and allowing to have happen to us because we have been criminally negligent as Americans? If this is a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, then we need to make those bums accountable. I was accountable for everything I did as an agent. Okay? I mean, I even remember one time when we interrupted a mugging. A guy stabbed somebody, and it was a whole big to-do. I drew my weapon. The guy charged me with the knife. I came very close to pulling the trigger. At the last second, he looked higher than a kite. He threw down the knife and ran. We never caught him. But the fact that I pulled my gun meant that I had to write a detailed report about why I pulled my gun in those days. And then I got correspondence from Region saying that an investigation into my actions could show no apparent wrongdoing, but I was admonished to read the appropriate sections of law and procedure in the investigator's manual that dealt with the use of deadly force. Didn't pull the trigger. We prevented this guy from dying. We saved the victim's life. Nothing in there about good going, but you're admonished to read the appropriate section about the use of firearms and deadly force without pulling the trigger. Metaphorically, how many times did Mr. Cuomo and his ilk pull the trigger? What do you think of that?
Yeah, at least 16,000 times.
What are we doing, folks? And every year, last year, over 90,000 people died of drug overdoses. That doesn't include the people who were high and killed somebody as they drove a car. It didn't include the people that had shootouts to get their hands on the money or the drugs to feed their habit. It didn't include the cartels who killed people in Mexico. And now Mexico is suing American gun manufacturers, remarkably. We never got resolution over Operation Fast and Furious that killed Brian Terry, the Border Patrol agent. America is becoming a third world country, and I would argue it's happening just we're allowing it to happen. Now, what do I mean by that? We need to challenge the politicians. I'm not talking about an insurrection. I'm not talking about sedition. But it comes back to asking the appropriate questions. We need to go to town hall meetings. And any politician who refuses to participate in a town hall meeting is insubordinate and should be voted out of office immediately. If my boss came up to me and said, Mike, tomorrow morning at 0800 hours, we're having an all-hands meeting, I couldn't say to my boss, gee, I was hoping to sleep in tomorrow. My only answer would be, which room are we going to be meeting in? Okay? And you were there. And you were there early so we could bring a cup of coffee with us to these meetings. And if it was at 5 a.m., then by God, we were there at 5 a.m. So if you're going to have a town hall meeting and you have an elected representative who blows it off, blow them off in the election booth. This is insanity. They operate with a level of impunity. They're civil servants. They're civil servants. They should be as accountable as I was as a federal agent. I don't think that's unreasonable, and they're not. They believe they're above the law because we allow them to conduct themselves as though they are above the law. It goes back to my dad, who said to me, you will teach people how they should treat you by demonstrating what you're willing to accept. And if you call up your congressman and say, we want a town hall meeting, and they say, no, we don't do that sort of thing, you know what has to happen in the next election. And by the way, I used to be against term limits. I now embrace term limits. I'm going to tell you a little secret why. Ideally, I'd like voters to make that determination by themselves. But what the parties do is if they've got an incumbent who they believe is unbeatable, they will not fund the campaign for their candidates. And they will not put up an A-list candidate because they see it as an exercise in futility. This isn't about governance. It's about winning elections. Look at the appeals you get in your emails, folks. My opponent has raised $358,000, and by midnight tonight, we need to match, and please send money, and do you want to be a supporter? Do you want to be a leader? Do you want to be, and each category requires more money from you. Could you imagine if, as a federal agent, I went out in the morning and told people, give me money? I'd be in front of a grand jury. And this is business as usual because we've allowed it to become business as usual. The whole idea to democracy, and I know there's going to be conservatives that are screaming at me right now saying it's a republic. Yes, it is, but it's a democratic process, folks. It's a form of democracy. But the idea is that the people rule. That's why it's democracy. Demos comes from people. Well, if the politicians did what the people wanted, they wouldn't need campaign contributions. We'd all be thrilled with what they're doing, and we'd gladly reelect them. But they're taking money from corruptors who have twisted their arm into believing they must act against our best interests, and that's what they're being paid to do. We're going to give you money if you act against the people you're supposed to represent. That's what this is about. And what you also don't know is many of these politicians have these kids working for them who were in their 20s, and they went to these universities, and they drank the Kool-Aid with not one but two straws. And they're going to them and saying, is this a good bill or a bad bill? And the kid says, yeah, it's a good bill. Okay, great. And what the politician doesn't know, that kid who works for him was offered a promotion at double the pay. If he can get that vote from that politician, he could go get a job on K Street for double or triple what he's earning this year. That's how rigged it is. I've jokingly said that if you want to have limitless clean energy in America, I know how to do it tomorrow. You want to know how you get free, clean energy with zero carbon? Put up revolving doors between the Congressional Office Building and K Street and attach generators to the spindles of the revolving doors. We could be selling power to Europe. What do you think of that?
It's sad, but I have no argument. It's heartbreaking, but you're absolutely right. And when you look at how deep, and I don't think there's any question about it now because of there's so much open source material concerning it, how deep into the pockets of the communist Chinese that Biden and his family are, and we worry. I mean, they're working so hard to establish this hegemony through the Belt and Road Initiative in Africa and all these different places, where they're giving these countries money that they know they'll never pay back, and then they're going to expand Chinese communism into those. And the best, if he can do it, that Joe Biden can do to say anything about what the Chinese are doing is going to be lip service if they allow him that opportunity.
Let me tell you, I was on an airplane many years ago. And I was flying to California to give a speech. This was shortly after 9/11. And there was a very pretty young lady sitting on the airplane next to me. It's a five-hour flight. We had lunch together. We had a conversation. Very affable, very bright young lady. She just got her master's degree in international finance or whatever. She was probably in her late 20s. And we got into a discussion about China. This was 18 years ago, maybe 17 years ago. And I said, the day is going to come when China's going to want to reclaim Taiwan. And they're going to call up our president, whoever is sitting in the Oval Office, and tell that president, we're going into Taiwan tomorrow. You can say whatever you want because your words mean nothing to us. But if you interfere, we're going to nationalize your factories. We will take all of your American people and put them in custody, and then we will decide whether to imprison them or just deport them back to America, and you won't be able to get a pair of socks out of China, and we're going to call in the loan." And this girl looked at me and said, "You're crazy, Mr. Cutler." I said, "Well, I might be crazy, but I'm not wrong." She said, "Well, China doesn't have any real need for Taiwan." I said, "Maybe not, but it's about ego, and no one has a bigger ego than the leader of a country, and that's particularly true when that leader is a dictator, and China is a dictatorship." And she didn't agree with me, but that's fine, and we know where it is now. He's a leader for life. And I said, "You know, it's like the guy that's married to an incredibly beautiful, loving wife who's given him amazing children, and she dotes on him, and she's created a life for him that he couldn't even dream of when he was back in college. And at a Christmas party, he has a couple drinks too many, and he does the horizontal mambo with some not-so-hot-looking receptionist because the opportunity's there, and his ego says, 'I can do this.' And then his wife finds out and divorces him. His life is ruined because he made a decision, and the action he took lasted all of 10 minutes because of his ego." I said, "Don't for a heartbeat think that China is different. It's not what they need. It's what they want, because to them, Taiwan is a thumb in their eye. Wherever she is these days, I wonder if she thinks about that old coot that sat next to her on the airplane, and she thought I was old school." But, you know, it's been gloom and doom. I want to end this thing with a little bit of humor, because I'm a sick person, and you know that I'm a little bit nuts. And my wife might say a lot nuts. So I want everyone to focus on the similarities between the two oldest professions, just for the moment. That's, of course, prostitution and politics. Both professions begin with the letter P. In both professions, lots of people get screwed. In both professions, the practitioners will assume any position, no matter how ridiculous, uncomfortable, dangerous, or contrary to common sense, for the right price. In prostitution, the clientele bring their fantasies that the prostitute tries to fulfill. In politics, the constituents bring their concerns, and the politicians respond by making promises that they fulfill by creating fantasies. STDs can give the clients of prostitutes a case of buyer's remorse or perhaps something more serious, while voters may also suffer buyer's remorse when they come to find out what their elected official actually does once he or she is sworn into office. Talk about the gift that keeps on giving. How did I do?
That's great. It's like Bob Hope once said, you know, his uncle ran for office because he wanted to do the public good. And when he got in here, that's what he did. He did them good.
By the way, you know, I met Bob Hope. And I always tell people, if you want to know how to be an effective speaker, JFK got me interested in public speaking. I got to hear him deliver the inaugural address. We had a blizzard in New York when he was inaugurated. But Bob Hope with that one-liner, or Johnny Carson with his one-liner and that look into the camera, I wish it was a skill that Donald Trump had cultivated. Humor is so much more effective, and we need humor today to survive. I tell people if I lose my sense of humor, my mind can't be far behind. But we also need to learn how to communicate with our neighbors, because at the end of the day, that's how we're going to win this, folks. We need to have conversations with our neighbors, not accusations, not insults. Not fights. That's not productive. We need to sit down and talk about the issues, talk about their dreams for their children as they grow up and their grandchildren. There's nothing anti-immigrant about my position, yet the media will say that because I want immigration enforcement, I'm anti-immigrant, and people who want anarchy are pro-immigrant, and nothing can be further from the truth. We've got to understand that what I'm calling for is the enforcement of immigration laws that at their foundation are designed to protect national security, public safety, public health, and the jobs and wages of Americans. And the fact that there are globalists who have convinced Americans that this is wrong, wow. P.T. Barnum was right when he said there's a sucker born every minute. And I will tell you that the facts speak for themselves. Please go to my website. It's michaelcutler.net. I do an internet radio program Friday nights on Blog Talk Radio, the Michael Cutler Hour, 7 p.m. East Coast time. I write for frontpagemag.com. I write for usinc.org. The American Conservative also has several of my articles posted. But I always like to remind people, and you know this, democracy is not a spectator sport. We've all got to be involved, folks.
And let's not forget, Mike, you have a great deal. Your star, once, and I'm very happy about this, your star is once again in the ascendant, because you're getting a lot of airtime now on One American News Network, on Newsmax, and I know that you got to
be
happy
about
that.
Newsmax tomorrow. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm going to be on Newsmax tomorrow morning at 10:25, roughly, a.m. East Coast time. Newsmax tomorrow morning.
They're not going to give you 2 hours. You know that, right?
No, I'll be happy with 3 minutes. I'm a New Yorker, and I can speak quickly. You know, that's the what it is.
Oh, we've been talking with our friend, our very good friend, Mr. Michael Cutler here on American Allegiance. Folks, I hope you've enjoyed the time that you got to spend with him. I know I always do. Mike, thanks once again for being with us this evening, and we're probably going to have to talk. I need to get you back over at my place here. You're overdue for a visit there within the next week or so.
We'll speak off air. I'll call you after the show. But, folks, I'm so glad you were listening tonight. I hope I've helped to give you a new perspective on the immigration crisis. And believe me, it is a crisis. But please stay engaged. Please be involved. I'm really counting on you. As Americans, we really need to find common ground. All of us do.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Michael Cutler. Mike, I'll be talking to you here shortly. Thanks again.
All right, buddy. Be well. Have a great evening.
Terrific stuff. That guy is fantastic. I tell you what, I met him in 2 years. This coming January will be when I first met Michael Cutler, and it was at a political conference down in Greenville, South Carolina, called Rock the Red, and it was Saturday night, and there was this little confab with Michael Cutler and Claire Lopez, Trevor Loudon, Tom Del Beccaro, and my podcasting friends Don Newen and Donna Fiducia, and it was a lot of inside baseball, and Don was thoughtful enough to bring me in and introduce me to these terrific thinkers, and Mike made some reference to the Mercury program, and after that, we just hit it off, and terrific guy. That's all the time we've got, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope that you enjoyed. We went a little long. I know Kevin chose only an hour, but when you get a powerhouse guest like Michael Cutler, you make room, and that's exactly what we did tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Kevin, I'm sure, will be back next week if he's not out collecting Pulitzers somewhere, or Peabody's, or some other great literary award for his publishing efforts. That guy's taken off. Brownie Fox Publications. You don't want to set that to the side. You want to pay attention to where they're going. They, too, have a star in the ascendant. That's all the time we've got, folks. We'll be back tomorrow night with my program, A Conservative Perspective, back-to-back with Mark Hoffman and Patriot Nation Radio Live. That'll start at 7. I'm the lead-off at 7 to 8, then Mark flies in solidly from 8 to 9. Thank you for the opportunity to visit. I appreciate it tremendously. I know on behalf of my friend Michael Cutler, he enjoyed the time he spent here with you as well. God bless you. God bless America. And we will be back, well, tomorrow night, we'll be back on A Conservative's Perspective. In the meantime, you guys take very good care of yourselves, and we will see you soon.